Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from June Sims, Bruce Alpert, and Brian Lynn. Later, John Russell and Jill Robbins will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, the National Museum of African American History and Culture opens Saturday, September 24th. What began years ago as legislation under then-President George W. Bush will soon be the newest addition to the Smithsonian Institution in Washington. VOA's Arish Arabasadi was invited to the new museum before it officially opened to the public. June Sims has his report.
What we want is a museum that uses the past to help you understand the world you're living in.
That is Lonnie Bunch III. He serves as curator of the Smithsonian Museum of African American History and Culture.
This is your story, regardless of who you are. That this is the story that tells you about your own family's struggle of freedom or citizenship.
Civil rights activist Jesse Jackson, a former presidential candidate, describes the power of the new museum.
It reshuffles the deck of American history. It's revolutionary.
The story starts with the slave trade that forcibly brought Africans on a long, difficult journey to North America. Jackson notes that African Americans have faced many struggles in the United States.
We built the country, and we were enslaved for 246 years, which means that we were enslaved longer than we have been free.
People visiting the new museum can see an early 1800s slave home. The Smithsonian's Nancy Burkaw describes the living conditions.
It would have been pretty unbearable living within this cabin. If you've ever been down to the South Carolina low country, you'll know that it's very heavy with mosquitoes and bugs. It's very hot. When we collected the cabin, snakes came out of the cabin.
The museum also has reminders of the Jim Crow laws in the southern states. Those laws effectively enforced racial separation and remained in effect into the 1960s. Supporters describe the legal policies as separate but equal. But in truth, everything was better for whites. Richard Curran, undersecretary of the Smithsonian Institution, provides an example.
If you were white, you bought your ticket, you walked into this rail car and you sat in the white section. The white section was a lot nicer than the black section.
The museum exhibit flows through time, from slavery to Jim Crow, to the civil rights movement and modern times. There are some areas dedicated to music and entertainment, as well as to sports. Jesse Jackson noted that equality ruled in sports when members of all races were finally permitted to compete.
Whenever the playing field is even and the rules are public, the goals are clear, referees are fair, and the score is transparent, we can make it.
The struggle for civil rights for African Americans served as a model, says Smithsonian official John Whittington Franklin.
African Americans paved the way through their strategies to assist other groups seeking equality.
President Barack Obama and his wife Michelle are to take part in the opening ceremony at the African American History and Culture Museum. I'm June Sims.
Americans are preparing for the first of three debates involving the candidates for president. The first debate takes place on September 26th. It will be held at Hofstra University in the city of Hempstead, New York. The first debate will include the candidates of the two main parties. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is the nominee of the Democratic Party. The Republican candidate is businessman Donald Trump. The other parties will not be represented at the first debate. The Libertarian Party, for example, has nominated former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson as its presidential candidate. The Green Party chose Jill Stein, who also served as its candidate in the 2012 elections. The moderator of the first debate will be television news anchor Lester Holt. The debate will be 90 minutes long. The three topics for debate will be America's direction, achieving prosperity, and securing America. Each topic will be debated for close to 30 minutes. Holt will begin each topic with a question, and each candidate will have 2 minutes to respond. Candidates will also have the opportunity to respond to each other. Many think the first debate could make history by drawing the largest audience ever to watch an American political event. American presidential debates and the media have a 56-year history. In 1960, Republican Vice President Richard Nixon debated Democratic Senator John F. Kennedy. The subject of the debate was domestic policy. The issues they discussed included education, health care, farming, the economy, labor, and the Cold War. But what the 1960 debate showed was how television was changing politics. In the first debate, radio listeners said Nixon won. Those who watched on television said Kennedy was the better debater. The difference in the audience's perceptions had to do with the candidate's appearances. Kennedy looked tanned and youthful on television. Nixon wore a gray suit that blended into the television studio background. Nixon, who was recovering from an illness, also looked pale and thin. A few months later, Kennedy won a narrow victory in the election. In 1980, President Jimmy Carter debated challenger Ronald Reagan. Carter led in the political polls before the debate. But Reagan was a former actor and comfortable in front of a studio camera. Reagan's relaxed performance during the debate helped secure him an easy victory. The 1992 debates featured three candidates. President George H.W. Bush faced challengers Bill Clinton and Ross Perot. During their conversation, Bush checked his watch. Some thought Bush's glance at his watch as a sign he was bored with the debate. Bill Clinton went on to win that election. I'm Bruce Alpert.
The U.S. government has released new guidelines for the fast-developing technology of driverless cars. The guidelines were announced Tuesday by the Department of Transportation. They were developed with companies working on the technology, as well as industry experts and safety groups. The administration of President Barack Obama commented on the new guidelines. It said they will help bring about the responsible introduction of driverless cars in a safe, clean, efficient way. Obama shared his thoughts on the technology this week in an editorial for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. In the 7.5 years of my presidency, self-driving cars have gone from sci-fi fantasy to an emerging reality with the potential to transform the way we live, he wrote. But he added, "We have to get it right. Americans deserve to know they'll be safe today, even as we develop and deploy the technologies of tomorrow." Obama said that is the goal of the new federal automated vehicles policy. It includes a list of 15 safety standards for the design and development of autonomous vehicles. The standards set policies for testing vehicles and recording information about crashes. They also require developers to provide safeguards for system failures and outline their plans to prevent vehicle hacking. Officials said the policies are meant as suggestions to guide the industry rather than rules backed by legal enforcement. But the guidelines give the government authority to carry out a recall on vehicle features that do not meet the safety standards. If a self-driving car isn't safe, we have the authority to pull it off the road, Obama wrote in his editorial. We won't hesitate to protect the American public's safety. The guidelines were welcomed as an important step forward by a group representing major companies involved in the technology. These include Uber, Google, Lyft, Ford, and Volvo. The service Uber is testing driverless cars in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Currently, the cars still have a human driver in the vehicle in case anything goes wrong. Uber recently also announced a $300 million deal with an automobile manufacturer, Volvo. The companies are to cooperate on self-driving technology and the production of vehicles. Ford has announced plans to make a self-driving car available by 2021. The car will have no steering wheel or pedal controls. At first, it will be sold to car-sharing services like Uber and Lyft. Later, it will go on sale to everyone. The chief executive officer of Uber's main competitor, Lyft, recently offered a prediction about car ownership. John Zimmer wrote in a blog post that private car ownership will all but end in major U.S. cities. Zimmer wrote, "Every year, more and more people are concluding it is simpler and more affordable to live without a car." He added, "And when networked autonomous vehicles come onto the scene, below the cost of car ownership, most city dwellers will stop using a personal car altogether." I'm Brian Lynn.
This is What's Trending Today. Last month, images of a bloody, wounded 5-year-old Syrian boy in an ambulance captured the world's attention. The boy had suffered head injuries when a bomb hit his family's apartment building in Aleppo. The boy was identified as Imran Dakhnish. This week, another little boy has captured the world's attention. A 6-year-old American named Alex wrote about Imran in a letter to President Barack Obama. Alex is from the state of New York. He wrote to the president after he saw the images of Imran. He wrote that his family would like to offer him a home in the United States. Alex opened his letter this way. Dear President Obama, remember the boy who was picked up by the ambulance in Syria? Can you please go get him and bring him to our home? Alex wrote that he would like to share his bicycle with Imran and that his younger sister would share her toys as well. He also wrote that he has a friend at school from Syria named Omar. I will introduce him to Omar. President Obama posted a video on Facebook Wednesday of Alex reading his letter. It has been viewed almost 8 million times. In the post, Obama described Alex as a young child who has not learned to be cynical or suspicious or fearful of other people because of where they come from, how they look, or how they pray. Imagine what the world would look like if we were, the president wrote. Imagine the suffering we could ease and the lives we could save. The president also mentioned Alex's letter earlier this week at a United Nations meeting on the refugee crisis. People have reacted to Alex's words on social media. One Facebook user wrote, "A 6-year-old who has more humanity, love, and understanding than most adults." Another said, "I wish there were billions of kids that were raised just like this little boy." And that's what's trending today. I'm Katie Weaver.
Many American Western movies use a common plot element. A mysterious man appears in a small, dusty town. He speaks to people in a short, purposeful way. He shows confidence and strength. Often, he is looking for revenge. Exploring this common plot element can help you learn about the structure of the English language. In a recent Everyday Grammar program, we explored one common adverbial or verb-modifying structure, the prepositional phrase. In today's report, we will discover two other common adverbials, the noun phrase and the verb phrase. Specifically, we will explore how adverbial noun and verb phrases can help provide information about the mysterious man. This idea might sound complicated, but we promise, unlike the bad guys in a Western, you will survive this lesson.
A noun phrase is a group of words that acts like a noun in a sentence. Think back to the second sentence of this story. A mysterious man appears in a small, dusty town. The phrase, a mysterious man, is an example of a noun phrase. Noun phrases can take several shapes, but in general, you can recognize them by looking for common words such as demonstrative pronouns or articles, among others. For example, the noun phrase, a mysterious man, begins with the article, a. Nouns and noun phrases can act as adverbials, that is, they can modify or add information to a verb. When noun phrases act in such a role, they describe time, place, quantity, or manner. So, what do adverbial noun phrases look like? A couple of examples that describe our Western film can help you see that adverbial noun phrases are not as complex as you might think. He arrived this morning. He is riding home. He travels a great deal.
Ask yourself what information these noun phrases provide. That can help you see that these noun phrases are giving adverbial information. Adverbial noun phrases might look like direct objects at first, but if you remember the kind of information that adverbials give, you will not have any trouble. Consider our examples.
He arrived.
When?
This morning. He is riding.
Where?
Home. He travels.
How much?
A great deal. Infinitives are the most common verb form to play an adverbial role. They consist of the base form of the verb plus two, which gives a signal that the verb is infinitive. But remember, infinitive verb phrases are not just verbs with two. They also have complements and modifiers. Consider this example. He went home early to rest before the gunfight. The infinitive verb phrase, to rest before the gunfight, is telling why the man went home early. You might mistake the infinitive verb phrase for a prepositional phrase. After all, both types of phrases can use to. There is, however, one important difference. In prepositional phrases, to is followed by a noun or noun phrase. In infinitive verb phrases, to is followed by a verb or verb phrase.
Infinitive verb phrases often answer a why question. Martha Kohn and Robert Funk, two English grammar experts, say an easy way to recognize adverbial infinitive verb phrases is to add the phrase in order to the sentence. This action will show you that the verb phrase is answering a why question. Consider our example.
He went home early to rest before the gunfight.
You could add the phrase in order to make this relationship clear.
He went home early in order to rest before the gunfight.
Occasionally, an infinitive operates adverbially without the meaning of in order to. However, these exceptions are not common in speech.
Remember the mysterious stranger? Here is one way to summarize a typical beginning of American Western movies. A stranger arrived this morning. He came to get revenge. These two short declarative sentences follow a similar pattern. They both have adverbials after the main verb. The noun phrase, this morning, gives information about when the stranger arrived. The infinitive verb phrase, to get revenge, tells why the man came. Once you understand this idea, you can have fun with adverbials. You can combine these sentences to create a new sentence. Here is an example. This morning, a stranger came to get revenge. The sentence structure is this: adverbial plus subject plus verb plus adverbial. The placement of adverbial information has changed, but it contains almost all of the same information as the first two examples. These examples show you that the adverbial structures often come at the beginning and end of a sentence. Understanding this idea will help you use longer, more complex sentences with multiple adverbial structures. Like other adverbials, you can sometimes change the order of adverbials in the sentence. See our previous Everyday Grammar story to read more about this idea.
Remember, adverbial structures are one of the reasons that sentences in English are longer than the basic sentence patterns we discussed in previous stories. Now that you have learned about adverbials, try looking for them when you are reading or listening to something in English. For example, try to find the adverbials in this short piece from Edgar Allan Poe's The Purloined Letter.
The next morning I stopped at his apartment to look for my glove. While we were talking, we heard people shouting in the street. Darcy went to the window and looked out. Quickly, I stepped to the shelf and put the letter in my pocket. Then I replaced it with a letter that looked exactly like it, which I had taken with me. I had made it the night before.
With time, you will master adverbials. Like a hero in a Western movie who coolly confronts his enemies, you too can meet adverbials without fear. I'm Jill Robbins.
I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.